Welcome to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller, and let me ask a question. Do you have a mentor? Do you have a trusted, experienced advisor to kind of help you walk through various things in life? Today, we're going to explore some good advice and encouragement, the kind of help a mentor would provide for how to live a well-balanced, healthy, godly life.
You know, John, I look back, I had two really good mentors that God brought into my life at just the right time. My football coach in high school, Paul Morrow, who's passed away. And then my first, what I would call my adult job, right? The first big job you get in that paycheck. That was more in my early 20s when I went to work in the paper industry, and that was Jeff Eaves, who taught me so much about business and but also spiritual things. And I'm grateful to both of those men because they spoke into my life and really helped me better understand myself. And you know, Jeff had to do write-ups for me, performance write-ups, and he'd say, hey, you're really good on this, but these are things you need to work on. And I, you know, that was kind of new to take that constructive criticism, but from somebody I appreciated and respected. You know, there's great examples of mentoring in the Bible. You think about the Apostle Paul with Timothy. That's an obvious one. Moses with Joshua. And of course, Jesus and how he taught the 12 disciples. He was mentoring them. And so mentoring is a biblical thing, in my opinion. Our guest today, Jesse Manassian, has spent, I think, over 20 years mentoring young girls, being a big sis to those girls and helping them. And for a time, she helped with our Brio magazine. I so appreciated her work in that relationship. And I'm looking forward to leaning in and talking about this with her.
Yeah, Jesse has a great website, lifeloveandgod.com. We're going to pick her brain today on a variety of topics that, while centered on young girls, are not specific to young girls. There's a lot of learning applications, I think, for all of us here. Jesse has been with us before. She's an author, speaker, and blogger, and she and her husband, Paul, have two teen girls of their own. Her newest book is really the foundation for our conversation today, Your Brightest Life: Tips for Navigating Relationships, Health, Faith, Mindset, and More.
Jesse, welcome back to Focus on the Family.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. And man, you know, it was 10 years ago, we were looking this up, and we recorded together. I think that was the first time. Yeah. And you introduced me to a new term, crushaholic, a teen girl term. Yeah, crushaholic. You like that? It stuck with me. So let's get back to crushaholic. What is it? And what challenges do teen girls have today with crushaholicism?
I kind of coined that term back then when I wrote Crushed to describe my life. That pretty much summed it up. Huh. And so many teen girls, I think, kind of go from one like to the next, and whether it's stopped when they don't receive that attention or affection from that guy that they're crushing on. But there's just, it's sort of can be summed up as a hole in our hearts that we're trying to fill by love and attention from the opposite sex. And sometimes it can be relatively harmless, and sometimes it can cause a lot of damage to our hearts, depending on the relationships
that we're in. It's so true. And we're going to spend a couple of days on this topic. So we want people to really get into it. And like you said, John, it's applicable to all of our lives, but this will be aimed at, you know, women and girls. But men, we've got things in here too. Any guys ever kind of blossom around girls and start showing off a little bit? Oh, yeah, you got the same problem. It's what we do. It's what we do as human beings. It's how we're made. You talk about the concept within the Christian community of brothers and sisters in Christ and treating one another as siblings. That's really interesting. I'd never thought about it that way, but it's a great concept. Explain it more thoroughly.
Yeah, I thought for a long time that what we're really after, that even that crushaholicism, there's a desire for connection and community. We're looking for love and relationship, not just of the romantic variety, but we want to be seen. We want to be known. And when God designed family, he designed family to fill a big part of that for us, you know, with parents, with siblings. And we learn in scripture that God designed family, not just in the sense that we think of the nuclear family, but also in the faith family, that when we join his faith family, we get more mothers and brothers and sisters and fathers and daughters. And I know for me, and I believe Jim as well, and John, we have benefited from having other family members in the faith family who have poured into us and have been spoken into our lives. It was sort of revelatory for me to learn as teen girls and as young adult women, having brothers in Christ, seeing them not just as a potential romantic relationship, but actually a brother that we can learn from, that we can learn how to throw a football correctly, and we can learn how to just all the things that men bring to the table that we can learn from, and vice versa.
Well, and you know, it's, I remember a Christian camp I went to at 17. I ended up kissing a girl. I mean, so I would have benefited from thinking of her as my sister. That would have helped me. There's no way I would have been kissing my sister.
Right? So I kind of went. That's a book title I think I want to write, Stop Kissing Your Sister.
Oh. Right. Because I mean, that's part of it. And you know, that's one of the things with my boys I'm always trying to talk to them about. In the dating moment, because they, you know, they're in their 20s now. But even in that dating space, teens, 20-somethings, I'm constantly saying, now you got to remember that girl is somebody's future wife.
That's right.
So you got to take care of her and take care of that relationship. I haven't said, you know, you need to think of them as your sister. That's like a door stopper right there. But that might be my next line.
But there is
something to that. I took it when I, you know, was thinking of that question. I was thinking of it more in that context, like handle each other well.
That's right. That's exactly right. To think, you know, unless you are husband and wife, you are brother and sister first.
Right.
And so how are you going to approach this relationship? For girls, I'm saying, how would you dress for your brother? Like, if you're going out with your brother, how would you dress? And it takes off some of the pressure, and then also sets up some boundaries for just approaching the relationship in a God-honoring way.
Yeah. But the other thing is just generally the lessons we learn about family. And you shared a story, and this is so heart-touching, I'll say it that way. You regretted the lack of relationship, or how your relationship was with your mom.
Yeah.
And it just described the setup there. Mm-hmm. What was the difficulty or difficulties? Yeah. And was it ever mended? Is your mom still here?
My mom and I actually had a very special relationship from an early age. She was a single mom, and it was just she and I for the first 5 years of my life. And she was my world. I loved my mom. But as I became a teenager, the world sort of turned on its axis and somehow just revolved around me. I don't know how that happens, but
it just happened.
It just happened to be that I was the center of my world. And, you know, in those teen years, looking back, there are a lot of relationship mistakes that I made. And I don't regret the fights that we had as much as I regret the apathy that I lived under the same roof as this amazing woman for 18 years. And took her for granted so often. And at the time, you think, you know, you're just focused on yourself, on your relationships, on school, on your stuff. And you don't think that eventually change is going to come. And it might come slowly or it might come all at once. And for me, everything changed the day I found out my mom had cancer. Mm-hmm. And we had 9 months after that. And I was no longer in the house. When I lost her at 27, I regretted so many of those years that I could have done relationship with her better, that I could have taken advantage of all the wisdom that she had to offer, all the late night baking in the kitchen or whatever, you know,
the
sewing.
Moments.
Yeah, those, all those moments. And it makes me super passionate to help families take advantage of those moments now and to make the most of family.
You speak in the book about a family manifesto, which I think is great. I don't think we have one. The fact that I don't know it is probably the case.
Not. Yeah.
But that family manifesto, what does it look like? How do you create it? What do you put in it?
The family manifesto is basically a list of 14 statements that I created in light of wanting to do family well and to help teens and young adults take advantage of the years that they have with their parents and their siblings in their home. So it's things like, you know, I'll tell my family I love them every chance I get.
That's
I'll get my camera out and actually take photos, or let my parents take photos. You know, they always get so upset when I get my camera out, but I want those memories. I want to record those memories in my, on my camera or in my journal. We'll fight fair, you know, the things like, you know, all families are going to disagree, but we want to learn to disagree well and to not use weapons that are going to hurt each other.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, so it's just a way to be intentional about doing family relationships.
Well, it sounds like things that circle around treating each other well, speaking well to each other.
Yeah.
Speaking life over each other. Those are all good, good things. That's one of the top things people will contact us about, is difficult relationships between them as the parent and our teens or our 20-somethings even. You sounded like, as a teen girl, you were you kind of had the seeds of this, the fact that the Lord has used you to create a family manifesto is evidence of that. You may be a little unique that way. A lot of teens just turn off with their parents and they, you know, they don't care. You can try to connect with me, but I don't want to connect with you. And you think about that. What can a parent do? It feels like you're trying with no tools. Like,
you know, that's so relatable.
Yeah. Like, help me.
Yes. No, there's a lot to unpack there. And I would say it goes both ways. I think, yes, our teens, they are in that space that most of us were in at that age of the world revolving around them. They're not thinking about mom and dad as people with names and dreams and goals and heartache and all that you're sacrificing to provide for them in this season of their life, all the ways that you're trying to love them.
Just don't say those things.
Don't say it. Keep it breezy. Keep it breezy.
Do you know what I'm doing for you?
Right? No. This has been an, this is hard for me as well, but learning to love with no expectation in return is what Christ modeled for us and what we get to learn on a deeper level in this season of raising teens and young adults is being the person who will always love, always support, always provide, and not have the expectation that it's going to be reciprocated evenly.
This is a really personal question, so I want to apologize before I ask it. But I think there'll be some gold in your answer. The relationship you had with your mom and that difficulty that you described, going back to when you were a teen and the negligence that you described that you had for her and didn't really make the time to be with her. Is that turned around with your own two teen daughters? Or is it like God's little lesson here? You remember how you treated your mom? Well, guess what? Your kids are going to treat you like that too. Have you tasted that or have you broken that? Have you been able to break that generational thing?
Both.
Okay.
I think both. I think there's an element where I got a taste of my own medicine. And there's also...
You did get a little bit of that.
Oh, you know, every parent prays that their kid will get one just like them.
And that's super healthy, though, for the parent to see that. Mm. Oh, my goodness. They're treating me just like I treated my mom
or my dad.
If you can see it, that's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely. And on the flip side, I feel like I've had some really great mentors in my life who have taught me how to parent teenagers well. And I've taken that advice to heart. And so I've been laying groundwork for, you know, since they were little and how to create lines of communication and how to show them love in the way that they receive it. So I think for the parent who sees their teen as just not caring and not wanting to be involved in their parents' life at all, some of that sometimes is how we're coming across as parents.
It's pain. It's pain in the child's heart of some
absolutely,
sort.
Absolutely.
Because it's not natural.
Or they feel like, you know, they're going to get a lecture or don't believe that their parents have their best interest at heart.
And I think that advice for the parent who is struggling in that, go to work. Mm-hmm. Be the architect. Figure it out. Where's the building week? Where's that relationship week? You're the adult. Figure out how to connect with your teen.
Yeah. Yeah. And my favorite word in this season is breezy. You know, like I'm going to keep it breezy with my kids. I'm not going to lecture. They might tell me something that absolutely freaks me out. I'm going to be so breezy. I'm like ice cold Mother Teresa.
It's so funny. Trey has always been our compliant child. He's great. And I remember one day, just for fun, he did this. I was like, hey, could you get the garbage? He goes, with his hand, little hand signal for the radio listeners, but it was W-E. And I'm looking at him going, what's W-E? He goes, whatever. And then he started laughing. It was so funny. I thought, oh, that was good. That was good. Whatever. So now I do it back to him.
That's fantastic.
It's good to be playful.
Whatever.
Yes. Yeah. Playful. Okay, parents, honestly, we get so caught up in all the lessons that we have to teach our kids. We are stuck in the mud. Like, so they know what we're going to say before we even say it. Like, have fun with them. Know that they know all the lessons that you've been trying to teach since they were little. Yeah. They've heard it. They don't need to hear it again in this moment. Like, ask good questions. Ask them what they think and actually listen to the answer instead of telling your opinion. Yeah. Like, just work on treating them as people who have an opinion and who have the ability to make good choices and bad choices. Yeah. But you know, it changes relationship. It changes relationship.
Yeah, so true.
And Jesse, the book has so many practical elements to it. One of them is what you, I see it right now, because you walk in the room and you're smiling. And that's one of your tips for young girls, for frankly, all of us, is smile more at people. What's the impact of a smile?
That's good.
This was fascinating to me. I was traveling to visit my nephew, little 9-month-old little boy. And every time I smiled at him, he would come with the biggest grin, just big. I'm a sucker for making babies smile, you guys. I honestly, I'm the weird lady in the checkout line who's like making faces at the baby until they smile. And I just could not get enough. And as I was on my way home, I think too much, but I was thinking about why would my nephew have smiled back at me? Like, what made him trust me? Like, babies, they're unfiltered in their emotions. Like, they're going to cry if they're freaked out. Like, it's not like they have an obligation to smile back. They don't hide their emotions. So for him to smile back at me means that he felt like he could trust me. He felt a sense of connection with me. It made him happy. It brought him joy. And I thought, what brought him joy? It was only my facial expressions. And I don't think we grow out of that. As adults, we can communicate warmth and trust and confidence and care for another person simply by communicating with our face, showing an expression on our face that's positive. Even on the way here, like walking through the airport, if you just smile at people, not like a Joker grin, like you're not trying to freak people out, but just a little upturn, people respond positively and it comes across as confident. And people respond in return. I'll get a door held open or I got a free sparkling water just for smiling.
You know, I've got to be more mindful. So Jean, I'll put this together. You can analyze this. So, you know, one time in our parenting, she said, you need to get down on a knee with the boys when they were little, because when you speak to them, you're a big guy and it is freaking them out. And I can see it when you're trying to correct them or whatever. It's more fear than it is. Your heart may know it, but your face ain't showing it, right? We're just stern. And we got to remember to express ourselves in that joy. Is that fair?
That is fair, which means we have to actually be feeling joy too. And as Christians, I think, you know, we can get so serious.
Yes, we can. Now, talking about expressing joy, what's the Zumba dance that you talk about in the book?
Okay.
Naturally.
Okay. Have you heard of Zumba?
I think I have. Isn't that the thing that cleans your floor?
I think that's a Roomba.
Oh, that's Roomba.
That's
my Roomba and my Zumba.
Zumba is like a Latin-inspired exercise class where you're like, you kind of have to, but I'm not going to get too into it because I have the moves of an injured antelope running for its life, honestly, which is why I was so nervous to go to this class because, you know, I want in my mind to have the moves of a certain Latina pop star, but it just doesn't come out right usually. So I show up to this class and I am all up in my head. I'm so intimidated. I'm like, everyone's going to be smooth except me. I just know it. And I walk into the room and there's this woman who's middle-aged, gray hair, pulls out of her bag this jingly, sparkly scarf. And she ties it around her waist and she gives her hips a little shake. And I'm like, wow, here I am so nervous and intimidated and all up in my head. And here's a woman who is just here to have fun and to be herself. And it just reminded me, as a believer, I should be the most joyful one in the room. And to in and to just have fun. Like, there are a lot of heavy things in the world. Like, I get that. I know that we do have real cultural things that are hard. But at the same time, we should have joy. We should have laughter. We should be able to dance like nobody's watching and just have fun and be okay with
that. Dance like nobody. Why do you keep coming back to this dancing? I tell you, I could talk to a group of 5,000 people. I'd be completely fine. Make me dance. I'm terrified. Terrified.
That's it. Zumba. We're signing you up, Jim.
I'm only going Roomba. I'm going to ride that Roomba.
I'll bring the scarf for you.
Hey, you encourage young women and all of us to believe in miracles. That can be a dicey thing. You talk about dancing with freedom. I mean, this idea that God could still do miracles. Speak to the importance of believing for miracles and then your experience with it.
I think most of us, if we read the scripture cover to cover, know that nowhere does it say God has stopped doing miracles. We know hypothetically and theologically that, yes, God can perform miracles. But I think in our own lives, we get so caught up in the here and now that we forget that God is the same God. He's still capable. And I had a very real experience with this years ago. I was at Yosemite National Park with my husband. He does landscape photography. And so we had gone from one end of the park to the other. It was covered in snow. It was New Year's Day. Oh. One end of the park to the other taking photos. And near the end of the day, we pulled into Curry Village to get a snack. And he looked down and he said, Jess, my wedding ring's gone. And we thought, oh, like, there's no way. Like, who knows where it could be? We checked the car, we checked the seat cushions, you know, and we're just like, okay, it's gone. And on our way out of Yosemite that night, we were driving out. He said, you know, I just want to go back to one more spa, this spot that we had gone at the beginning of the day, because it'll be better lighting.
On the other side of the park.
So I'm like, okay, sure, fine. You know, we went. And he ran off with his camera down the trail, and I was trailing behind and just walking along in the snow. And I just prayed, Lord, I know you know where that ring is, and I know it's not a big deal in light of eternity, but if you would just show us where it is, we would remember every New Year's Day that you're a God who does miracles. And I kid you not, I looked down at my feet in the snow, and making a perfect silver circle was Paul's ring right
there
in the snow.
Right at your feet. Right at that moment.
Wow. And I just, so now every New Year's Day, we throw a party remembering.
So you kept your promise.
We did. And a few years later, we were hiking in the Sierra Nevada mountains. We had hiked 8 miles that day, pulled into camp, exhausted. And Paul looks down and his wedding ring is gone.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought, first of all, why did we not get that ring size the first time?
Like,
we are idiots. We need to fatten you up a little bit. And I didn't even want to pray. I didn't pray. I was like, God already returned it once. Like, asking a second time, that's a little presumptuous. But we looked around the camp and we didn't find it. And he's like, I'm going to go hike up this mountain up here to get the sunset. I'm like, that's fine. I'm staying here. It's cold. So I got into the tent. And as I was walking into the tent, I was praying, Lord, I know you know where Paul's wedding ring is. And clearly you can do miracles. You've done it before. So if you wouldn't mind showing us where it is, we would remember that you are a God who not only does miracles, but is incredibly patient with us. And I pulled the sleeping bag up as I got into my bag, and it was sitting on top of the sleeping bag. And I was just in tears. Like, what a kind God.
You know, I wonder how many of those things we don't even notice, even as believers, that we're not in tune enough.
Yeah.
To really see the little little gestures that God is doing for us every day.
Absolutely, every day.
I think when we get to heaven, that maybe that's all out there for us and we see it all.
Yeah.
And we just drop to our knees.
I think we will. Absolutely.
I had no clue.
And I have to share the third story about missing rings, though, because this does sort of bring another. I'm so embarrassed to say, Jim, except this time it was my wedding ring.
And oh, my goodness.
I, through a series of events that I don't need to get into, had to punch a life-size hockey puck for a camera for a video that we were making at a Christian camp. So
wow. Yeah.
Somehow during the punching scene, my wedding ring flew off my hand into a front yard. It was not a mountain. It was not Yosemite covered in snow. It was just a front yard with some grass. And so I was feeling a little confident, like, okay, God, this is child's play.
I got this one.
We looked in the grass, didn't find it. I'm praying, like, Lord, clearly you can do miracles. Clearly you know where this ring is. I never found my wedding ring.
Oh, wow.
And mine was more expensive than Paul's. I'm a little salty at God about that one. But I think the three stories are all part to one whole truth, that God can do miracles. He wants us to ask. We can ask again and again, even when we've asked before, because he doesn't tire of giving good gifts to his kids. And when he does say no, it's for a higher purpose that maybe we can't see in that moment, but we can trust that he is a good God.
Yeah, and I think the question there, Jesse, is how do you not become bitter over him not answering
that one? Because he said no to healing my mom from cancer. He said no to finding that wedding ring, which is such child's play. He said no to a job that I really wanted. Or, you know, we have to be able to ask for those miracles and trust the response. Like that I feel like is true faith.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, this whole conversation has been good, I think. And it's your book, Your Brightest Life, Tips for Navigating Relationships, Health, Faith, Mindset, and More. And it's an excellent resource. And it's been good to have you. I do want to come back and keep it going. There's much more in the book, and we're not even going to cover it all in 2 days.
Some wonderful insights from our guest, Jesse Manassian, about drawing closer to God and your family members in the community of faith. And we hope you were encouraged by this first part of our conversation and that you make plans now to join us for part two. Thanks for listening to Focus on the Family with Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
Today we explored how growing up can be challenging, navigating school, friendships, relationships, and discovering who you are. Jesse Manassian shared some practical and hopeful tips about life, love, and God that hopefully your whole family can benefit from. We also looked at the importance of mentors, trusted, experienced guides who can walk with you or your daughter through life with wisdom and faith. I hope you've been encouraged, particularly if you're parenting teen girls like I am. Our resource today is Jesse's book, Your Brightest Life: Tips for Navigating Relationships, Health, Faith, Mindset, and More. You can get your copy online at safamily.co.za or by calling 031-716-3300. I'm Alison Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to join us next time for the conclusion of our program, when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.